ॐ अग्निचमिनन्दस्य जन जन सलकय चक्षुस्मृतान्जेन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुविष्टं स्थपितं जेन भूतले सायं रूपकदामायं ददति स पञ्चाञ्चिकाम्। वंशकपटुभ्यश्च कृपसन्धुभयेभ्यश्च अधीतनं भवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्रीद्वैतगिरिराधा शिवसरिभो भक्तिविन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। Jad Bharat was captured by thieves, and they were about to kill him. And yet, he was not even slightly disturbed. How is that possible? There was only two ways it can be possible. One is that he's a complete fool, and he doesn't even know that he's going to be killed. And he doesn't, and he looks at like an animal is being fed by the keeper of the slaughterhouse, and he's thinking, boy, my servant the keeper of the slaughterhouse, or my servant the farmer, comes and brings me food every day. And he doesn't realize that that same farmer is sharpening his knife to kill him. Because he's a fool. Animals have no intelligence. Or, and as quite different from an animal, Jad Bharat was in no anxiety because his understanding was tatar dehantara praptiya dhiras. He was dhiras. He was a sober person. Dhiras tatra namuyate. His understanding was that he, nahanyate hanyamane sharire, his understanding, his realization, not only understanding, because understanding implies intelligence, but his actual realization, his actual conscious way of thinking, was he was experiencing himself as an eternal soul. And if one understands himself as eternal soul and knows himself, realizes, experiences himself, because we all have a sense of identity. We have a feeling of I-ness. That I exist and I have a being, a substance, an identity. So when that is on the spiritual platform, when the illusion of the bodily identification, the thinking that ahankar, I am the body, when that is removed and we see our true nature as eternal souls and actually experience ourselves on that level, then how would that cause us anxiety any more than when we take off our clothes in the evening or the morning and discard them? That doesn't cause us any anxiety because the person remains the same. So similarly, the person, the eternal soul, remains the same. So Jad Bharat was in no anxiety, even though his life, his physical life, his physical body was being threatened. It did not disturb him in the slightest. And in addition, he saw that Krishna, as Prabhupada quotes Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, maro bi rako bi yo ishka tohar, Krishna dasa prati tua alikar. Whatever you want, Krishna. So that's the very positive side of the self-identification. Not only am I eternal, but I am Krishna's. I am Krishna's. and I am Krishna's loving servant. So if Lord Krishna, my master, wishes to treat me like this, this doesn't at all interfere with my loving eternal relationship with him. Whatever he likes, because there's something wonderful, mercy in this for me. Just like as we'll hear in the sixth canto, when Chitraketu Maharaj becomes cursed and he has to take his next birth as a demon. He was a demigod practically, something called the Vidyadhara. He received that benediction from Lord Shankarshan. But then he was cursed and had to assume or enter as he himself as a soul. That soul entered the body of a demon named Vritrasura. And then Prabhupada quotes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explaining that why did this happen to such an exalted devotee? And the reason was that the Lord of Vaikuntha, the Lord, wanted him back quickly. So who knows what good lurks behind every bad circumstance for one surrendered to Krishna? No one knows. So just accepting Krishna has some plan, the bad circumstance isn't bad then. It's a gateway to walk through. So therefore it becomes the gateway to something still better. So that's the cause of a devotee's lack of anxiety, even in the most difficult of situations, because he feels Krishna there. So this was the supreme character of Jadbharat. Now we'll continue after describing therefore at all times the devotees always take shelter. Take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, of him. Therefore they are free from anxiety. For them this is so Jadbharat's position was not especially wonderful because he was that realized. So now what happened to Jadbharat after the goddess Kali burst from the deity and then after she killed all the thieves in Daku, the dacoits, the rogues and thieves who were trying to hurt this great devotee. And then what did he do? What did Jadbharat do? So the first verse of the 10th chapter. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear king, after this, King Rahugana, ruler of the states known as Sindhu and Sovir, a king, was going to Kapila Ashram." Where is Kapila Ashram? If it is Ganga Sagar, is that also known as Kapilashram? So this is on the Bay of Bengal. Is it in Bangladesh or in West Bengal? Bangladesh. It's just in the Sundarban goes into Bangladesh also? Half. So is it near in Sundarban? Yes. So there's a big festival there every year. One time a year, there were so many thousands and thousands of devotees go. So he was going to Kapila Ashram, this king whose name was Rahugana, the king of Sindhu. Sindh is very far, Suvira. Sindh is on the other side. If this is where he was going. So when the king's chief palanquin carriers reached the banks of the river Ikshumati, they needed another carrier. Therefore they began searching for someone, and by chance they came upon Jadbharat. Now, was that fortunate for them? Listen to what they were going to do. They considered the fact that Jadbharat was very young and strong and had firm limbs. So were they thinking it was fortunate that they found Jadbharat? Now from Jadbharat's point of view, was it fortunate? They needed someone to help carry the... There he was, just wandering around, and they they wanted someone to carry the palanquin. Was it fortunate from his point of view? You say yes. From his point of view, he didn't care, actually. He didn't care. He didn't think of it as fortunate. He thought it was the fortunate in the sense of the removal of his previous unfortunate karma by acting it out. That's what he was thinking. So they considered the fact that Judd Bharat was very young and strong and had firm limbs like cows and asses. He was quite fit to carry loads. This is what they were thinking. Thinking in this way, although the great soul Judd Bharat was unfit for such work, they nonetheless unhesitatingly forced him to carry the palanquin. So they were thinking that finding Judd Bharat was very fortunate for them. But to make a great soul do something horrible like that, was it actually their fortune? No. But yet, because they dealt with a great soul, it ended up being their greatest fortune. And we'll hear how. The palanquin. Anyone not know what a palanquin is? Anyone know what a palanquin is? You didn't raise your hand when I asked for who didn't know, so therefore you obviously know what a palanquin is. Yeah.
Carrot.
You mean a swan airplane?
Yeah.
No. What's a palanquin? Is it king carrier?
Yeah.
No. I mean other people than other than kings use palanquins. Sometimes, but ungrade souls also.
People?
Yeah, it's a people carrier. That doesn't give it. It might be a one of those two-wheeler scooters or something like that. What is a palanquin? Do you know? Yes, you do know. It's got two. Yeah. Yeah, it's got two poles like that, and people carry it. So it's actually really hard work. In Jagannath Puri, I've seen them carry the heavy deities on palanquins like that. Because you have to time your steps with all the palanquin, otherwise it's too bumpy. All the carriers have to carry their, have to have their steps timed, and there's both sides have to be going. And kings are sometimes quite heavy. So, thinking in this way, although the great soul Judd Bharat was unfit for such work, they nonetheless unhesitatingly forced him to carry the palanquin. The palanquin, however, was very erratically carried by Judd Bharat due to his sense of nonviolence. As he stepped forward, he checked before him every 3 feet to say whether he's about to step on ants. So it's very, when you're carrying a palanquin, it has to be, as I said, there's timing, because if one of the, if the people, all the people on the right side have to, their steps have to be exactly in time with the people on the left side, otherwise it doesn't bounce. And with each other and the people on the left side, so it moves back and forth very. So Judd Bharat, he wasn't in step, because he was always checking to see if there were ants in front of him. Why? Yeah, he cared for the ants. He didn't want to cause pain to even a simple ant. So consequently, he could not keep pace with the other carriers. No, he couldn't, because he couldn't keep in step or pace. Due to this, the palanquin was shaking. And King Rahugana immediately asked the carriers, "Why are you carrying this palanquin unevenly? Better carry it properly." We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport, explaining the mood of Judd Bharat and why was he doing this. Although Judd Bharat was forced to carry the palanquin, he did not give up his sympathetic feelings towards the poor ants passing on the road. A devotee of the Lord does not forget his devotional service and other unfavorable activities, even when he is in a most distressful condition. So he was in such a difficult condition carrying this palanquin, this heavy load, great soul, that still he didn't, he kept his integrity, the integrity of his character, because he was a great devotee. Judd Bharat was a qualified Brahmin, highly elevated in spiritual knowledge, yet he was forced to carry the palanquin. He didn't mind this, But while walking on the road, he could not forget his duty to avoid killing even an ant. A Vaishnava is never envious or unnecessarily violent. There were many ants on the path, but Jadbharat took care by looking ahead 3 feet. When the ants were no longer in his way, he would place his foot on the ground. A Vaishnava is always very kind at heart to all living entities. In his Sankhya Yoga, Lord Kapila Dev explains, Surida Sava Dehinam. Living entities assume different bodily forms. Ajatra Shatrava Shantu. A Vaishnava is kind, Surida, he is a dear friend to all living entities. Surida Sava Dehinam. No enemies. Living entities assume different bodily forms because they're souls. Those who are not Vaishnavas consider only human society worthy of their sympathy. But Krishna claims to be the supreme father of all life forms. Consequently, the Vaishnava takes care not to annihilate untimely or unnecessarily any life form. Because if you kill an animal, he has a particular term of existence that he has to fulfill, sort of like a prison term within a particular body. And if you kill him untimely or unnecessarily, you're shortening his term in that body, and therefore he has to take another birth. He has to undergo an unnecessary birth and death, and he has to take a birth and fulfill his term. So therefore you've caused some extra suffering, and therefore you have to suffer for that. So that implicates one in sinful activity. So this is something important for us to keep in mind, to not, as we are aspiring to be Vaishnavas, so we are naturally non-violent as well. We should strongly remember this. So back to the carrying of the palanquin. So we say, the king warned them, carry it properly. So when the palanquin carriers heard the threatening words of Maharaj Rahugana, now what do you think they thought? What were they thinking? If you were a palanquin carrier and you were carrying it, and the king, and there was one person who was getting everyone out of step and causing the palanquin to rock back and forth, and the king said, better carry it properly. Now what would your reaction be?
My reaction?
Yeah.
If someone told me that,
then... You aren't listening. We caught you. What would your reaction be? Yeah, immediately try to say, it wasn't me who did it, it was him. Point the finger at someone. So when the palanquin carriers heard the threatening words of Maharaj Rahugana, they became very afraid of his punishment and began to speak to him as follows. After all, he could have them caned, beaten, whipped, anything. Killed. So they said, oh Lord, please note we are not at all negligent in discharging our duties. We have been faithfully carrying this palanquin according to your desire. But this man, they pointed the finger, who has been recently engaged to work with us, cannot walk very swiftly. Therefore, we are not able to carry the palanquin with him. Because Jad Bharat was caring for the ants, and they were just carriers, sort of, they didn't have a high consciousness. They were sudra types with low consciousness, and therefore they didn't carry about it. They had different concerns. They were only concerned with the king not punishing them, and Jad Bharat had so many other concerns. He was concerned about pleasing Krishna. So therefore there was a natural unbalance between that one palanquin carrier and the others. So King Rahugana, text 5, could understand the speeches given by the carriers who were afraid of being punished. He could also understand that simply due to the fault of one person, the palanquin was not being carried properly. So he understood their minds, because sometimes even when we are at fault, when we're afraid of something bad happening to us, we'll point to the other person, and we'll go into what's called nowadays some victim consciousness, that everyone feels themselves very innocent and victimized by so many circumstances out of their control. So the king understood this, but yet he also understood that that it was true, due to this fault of one person, the palanquin was not being carried properly. Knowing this perfectly well and hearing their appeal, he became a little angry. Although he was very advanced in political science and was very experienced, he knew how to control people, yet he became angry. Prabhupada explains, or the next verse explains, his anger arose to his inborn nature as a king. Kings are passionate by nature. They deal with rajagun, the mode of passion. Raja means passion. Raja means king. And kings, passionate people, they don't like when anything gets in the way of their satisfying their desire. So the king's desire was the smooth ride. And this one man was causing him trouble, and he became a little angry. Although he was advanced in political science and was experienced, his anger arose due to his inborn nature as a king, not liking anything stop his desire from actualizing. Actually, King Rahugana's mind was covered by the mode of passion, and he therefore spoke as follows to Jadabharat, whose Brahman effulgence was not clearly visible, being covered like a fire covered by ashes. So both of them were covered, one by the mode of passion, and the other just his Brahman effulgence was not being seen. It wasn't actually covered. Actually, it wasn't covered. Purport by Prabhupada. The distinction between Rajagun and Sattvagun, passion and ignorance, is explained in this verse. Although the king was very upright and advanced in political science and governmental management, he was nonetheless in the mode of passion. And therefore, due to a slight agitation, he became angry. Jadbharat, despite all kinds of injustice endured because of his deaf and dumb display, remained silent by the strength of his spiritual advancement. So he tried to cover his actual position. Nevertheless, his Brahman Teja, his Brahman effulgence, his spiritual power, was indistinctly visible in his person. But the king tried to cover his anger, but he couldn't. He became angry. And he begins to speak to Jadbharat. King Rahugana told Jadbharat, "How troublesome this is, my dear brother. You certainly appear very fatigued because you have carried this palanquin alone. Without assistance, there he was with the other carriers helping him, or him helping them. So you're so fatigued, you've been carrying this palanquin alone without assistance for a long time and for a long distance." For he had just been employed. "Beside that, due to your old age," he was young, "you have become greatly troubled. My dear friend, I see that you are not very firm nor very strong and stout. Aren't your fellow carriers cooperating with you?" In this way, the king criticized Jadbharat with sarcastic words. Yet despite being criticized in this way, Jadbharat had no bodily conception of the situation. He knew that he was not the body, he knew that he was not his body, for he had attained his spiritual identity. He was neither fat, lean, nor thin, nor had he anything to do with a lump of matter, a combination of the five gross and three subtle elements. He had nothing to do with the material body and its two hands and legs. In other words, he had completely realized his spiritual identity, Aham Brahmasmi. He was therefore unaffected by the sarcastic criticism from the king. Without saying anything, he continued carrying the palanquin as before. So we'll read some of Prabhupada's purport here. This body, or the body that of Jadbharat, was very strong and stout, in sound condition, and quite competent to carry the palanquin. Due to his being freed from the bodily conception, the sarcastic words of the king did not at all affect him. Just like if someone says, "You're really dumb," or "Boy, you're stupid," or women are like that, or men, oh, or criticize the country we're born in, or something like that. "Oh, he's like this, or like that. Fat, stupid. Black, white, blah, blah, blah." And we feel these things like spears in the heart. And what's the cause of that? Because we're thinking we're the body. We have an attachment to the body. So therefore these criticisms seem, we take them as if they're aimed at us. But if someone criticizes someone else's body, "Boy, look how fat that person is," we don't feel the pain at all. Because we don't identify with that body, we identify with this body. But Jadbharat was in a completely different mentality. Completely different mentality. So when the king used sarcastic words because he had no attachment to his body at all, that's like if you were cold, and you saw a sweater just, or a blanket lying down, and you were cold, and you were gonna, and then 2 minutes later you were gonna be warm. So you pick this up, this blanket, and you wrap yourself in the blanket. And someone happened to walk by and said, "Boy, look at that old blanket you're wearing." What would you would think? Okay, so it's an old blanket, so. But if you just bought a fancy new coat and you really were attached to it, and someone said, "Boy, that coat doesn't suit you at all," you know, just something like that. "Boy, where did you get that coat? You get it at Salvation Army or something like that?" And you just immediately, you know, either you'd take it back or you'd mentally say, "Boy, this person who said that is really stupid, isn't he? Doesn't have his taste as..." But Jadbharat had no identification with it, and because it was his body, it wasn't him. It was a blanket that he was picking up for a couple of minutes only. So the sarcastic words of the king did not at all affect him. The body is created according to one's karma. And material nature supplies the ingredients for the development of a certain type of body. The soul the body covers is different from the bodily construction. Therefore, anything favorable or mischievous done to the body does not affect the spirit soul. The Vedic injunction is asango hi ayam purusha. The spirit soul is always affected by material arrangements. Is always unaffected. Did I say affected or unaffected? Which one did I say? Did anyone notice?
Yes.
Oh, everyone was saying it's not proper to criticize the speaker of the Bhagavatam, but now that's an interesting question. That is, the soul affected or unaffected by the body? If you put your hand in a fire, You may not be your body, but are you going to be affected? You're going to scream. Now, Dvaiparada, or Maharaj Rahugan is actually going to ask this question after. So, but actually the spirit soul is always unaffected by material arrangements. So thereafter, when the king saw that his palanquin was still being shaken, so Jadbara just picked up the palanquin and continued. It was still being shaken by the carriers. What do you think he said? Oh, you must be so difficult for you. You think he was compassionate? You think he was sarcastic? No, he became very angry this time. Because if there's anything a king doesn't like more than his desires not being fulfilled and being uncomfortable, it may be someone, especially a lower person like that, disregarding him, his words. It's an affront, such an affront. So the king, when he saw the palanquin was still being shaken by the carriers, he became very angry and said, "You rascal, what are you doing? Are you dead despite the life within your body? Do you not know that I am your master? You are disregarding me and are not carrying out my order? For this disobedience, I shall now punish you just as Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, punishes sinful persons, people. I shall give you the proper treatment so that you will come to your senses and do the correct thing." Thinking himself a king, King Rahugana was in the bodily conception and was influenced by material nature's modes of passion and ignorance. Due to madness, so there's two kinds of madness. Mad means, if you say something, you're really mad. It could mean he's either angry or crazy. Right? So in this case, which was the king? Was he angry or crazy? Huh?
Angry.
He was angry and crazy. Because identification with the body is insanity. That's a point. So that means we are all crazy. So therefore Prabhupada, one of the first essays he wrote or was published in his name, it was on, based on lectures that he had given, was called "Who is Crazy?" So he was quite... King Rahugana was in the bodily conception and was influenced by material nature's motive, passion, and ignorance. Due to madness, he chastised Jadbharat with uncalled for and contradictory words. Jadbharat was a topmost devotee and the dear abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What does that mean, that he was the dear abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Yeah, Krishna lived within him, and he was dear. He was with him. This actually, the madness. Yes, Bhagawan, Brahmana, Brahma Bhuta, fully self-realized, Sarva Bhuta Suridatma, Yogi Ishwara. So therefore, the king did not know. Jadbharat was the topmost devotee and the dear abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Lord was within him. Although considering himself very learned, the king did not know about the position of an advanced devotee situated in devotional service, nor did he know his characteristics. Jadbharat was the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He always carried the form of the Lord within his heart. He was the dear friend of all living beings. And he did not entertain any bodily conception. He therefore smiled and spoke the following words. read a little bit of Prabhupada's purport. Being self-realized, Jet Bharat, who was fully situated on the transcendental platform, did not at all become angry. Instead, he smiled and began to deliver his teachings to King Vahugana. A highly advanced Vaishnava devotee is a friend to all living entities, and consequently, he is a friend to his enemies also. In fact, he does not consider anyone to be his enemies. Suridas Savadehinam Ajata Shatrava Shantu Shanta. Sometimes a Vaishnava becomes superficially angry at a non-devotee, but this is good for the non-devotee. The great Brahmana, Jet Bharat, so after being chastised by the king, Jet Bharat began to speak. My dear king and hero, whatever you have spoken sarcastically is certainly true, and we can imagine how shocked Maharaj Rugana was to suddenly this palanquin driver starts puller who was causing so much trouble to him, who he was so angry at, began to speak philosophically to him. Whatever you have spoken sarcastically is certainly true. Actually, these are not simply words of chastisement. For the body is the carrier. The load carried by the body does not belong to me, for I am the spirit soul. There is no contradiction in your statements, because I am different from the body. I am not the carrier of the palanquin. The body is the carrier. Certainly, as you have hinted, I have not labored carrying the palanquin. He was sarcastic. Oh, you have worked so hard. So he's saying, no, you're right. You're sarcastically saying I wasn't working. And actually it's true. I wasn't doing anything. The body was doing it. You have said that I am not stout and strong. You have said I am not stout and strong, and these words are befitting a person who does not know the distinction between the body and the soul. The body may be fat or thin, but no learned man would say such things of the spirit soul. You don't turn to someone and say, you have a fat soul. You say you have a great soul, you're a great soul, but not a fat soul or a thin soul. So the body may be fat or thin, but no learned man would say such things of the spirit soul. As far as the spirit soul is concerned, I am neither fat nor skinny. Therefore, you are correct when you say that I am not very stout. Also, if the object of this journey and the path leading there were mine, there would be many troubles for me. He was saying, oh, you've undergone so many troubles. But because they relate not to me, but to my body, you're right, there's no trouble at all. The body is troubled, but that has nothing to do with me. So he wasn't bluffing. He wasn't just speaking one thing and feeling another. He was actually realizing this. 10. Fatness, thinness, bodily and mental distress, thirst, hunger, fear, disagreement, desire for material happiness, old age, sleep, attachment for material possessions, anger, lamentation, illusion, and identification of the body with the self are all transformations of the material covering of the spirit soul. A person absorbed in the material bodily conception is affected by these things, but I am free from all bodily conceptions. Consequently, I am neither fat nor skinny nor anything else you have mentioned. Purport. Srila Narottama Das Thakur has sung, Deha Smriti Nahiyar Samsara Bandhana Kahantar. One who is spiritually advanced has no connection with the body or the bodily actions and reactions. When one comes to understand that he is not the body and therefore is neither fat nor skinny, one attains the topmost form of spiritual realization. When one is not spiritually realized, the bodily conception entangles one in the material world. And continuing a little further down, the more we advance our freedom from the bodily conception, the more we are fixed in devotional service. The more we advance our freedom from the bodily conception, the more we are fixed in devotional service, and the more we are happy and peaceful. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya says that those who are too materially affected continue the bodily conception. Such persons are concerned with different bodily symptoms, whereas one freed from bodily conceptions lives without the body, even in material conditions. Dadbrat continued, "My dear king, you have unnecessarily accused me of being dead though alive. In this regard, I can only say that this is the case everywhere, because everything material has its beginning and end. As far as you're thinking that you are the king and master and are thus trying to order me, this is also incorrect, because these positions are temporary. Today you are a king and I am your servant, but tomorrow the position may be changed and you may be my servant and I your master. These are temporary circumstances created by providence. So you are dead although you are alive." Like Krishna told Maharaj Yudhisthira when he wanted to discourage Dronacharya. What did he tell him during the battle of Kurukshetra? What did he tell Yudhisthira Maharaj to say to Dronacharya? Yeah, his son's name was Aswatthama. So he wanted to tell him, so he knew that Dronacharya was so attached to his son, Aswatthama. So if Yudhisthira, no one would, because Yudhisthira never lies. So if you say that Aswatthama is dead, then Dronacharya will believe that and then become so discouraged and will be able to kill him in the battle. So what did Yudhisthira do? He didn't want to lie. Elephant named Aswatthama. And then Yudhisthira said, "Aswatthama,
the elephant,
is dead." Something like that. But that was actually a fault on Yudhisthira's part. Prabhupada explained this to me. Because Krishna doing what Krishna wants is the ultimate truth. But looking at it from this point, that you are dead though you're alive, what does that mean? It means that everyone is dead. It's just a matter of time. So was Aswatthama dead, actually? Already, Aswatthama the person, he was dead. It was because Krishna had said that everyone here in this battle is dead. And it's just a matter of time. So in that sense also, it's true. And one time someone asked Prabhupada, "What do you see when you look around and when you see, what's your vision?" It was in an airport. I mentioned this before. What do you see when you look at the people? Your vision isn't the same as ours. We see, oh, this person's sophisticated, this person's old, this person's young. So someone asked Prabhupada, "What do you see?" And what did he say? He said, "So many flapping dead bodies." Flapping dead body, because sometimes when a chicken or some animal is killed, they're already dead, their heads are chopped off, and they're still flapping around some though. They're already dead. So the people are already dead. It's just time. But no one knows like this. No one thinks like this. And we can point to them. But we're also the same. Thinking like that. Proud of our strength, our youth, our this, our that. We're flapping dead bodies unless we're alive on the spiritual realm. Did I just ruin your day? So Prabhupada says in his purport, "Without self-realization and knowledge, conditional life continues, and one falsely claims himself a king, a servant, a cat, or a dog. These are simply different transformations brought about by the supreme arrangement. One should not be misled by such temporary bodily conceptions. Actually, no one is master within the material world, for everyone is under the control of material nature, which is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the ultimate master, as explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Don't you know I am your master? The Rūgana said. And so Prabhupada is explaining, no, no. There is only one master, as Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Ekala Ishvara Krishna, Ara Sabha Britya. The only master is Krishna, and everyone else is his servant. Forgetfulness of our relationship with the Supreme Lord brings about our suffering in the material world. Jadrat continued, My dear king, if you still think that you are the king and that I am your servant, you should order me and I should follow your order. I can then say that this differentiation is temporary and it expands only from usage or convention. I do not see any other cause. In that case, who is the master and who is the servant? Everyone is being forced by the laws of material nature. Therefore, no one is master and no one is servant. Nonetheless, so he's saying that if everyone is being controlled by nature, by goodness, passion, ignorance, you're forced to act in a particular way according to your nature, the modes that control you, and I'm forced to act in another way according to the modes of nature that control me. Some people are forced to act good, some people are forced to act bad due to their karma, forced by the modes of material nature. So if everyone is forced, who's the master? So it's just conventional, external, to say that, superficial. And then he concludes by saying, nonetheless, if you think that you are the master and that I am your servant, I shall accept this. Please order me. What can I do for you? My dear king, you have said, you rascal, you dull, crazy fellow, I'm going to chastise you and then you'll come to your senses. In this regard, let me say that although I live like a dull, deaf and dumb man, I'm actually a self-realized person. What will you gain by punishing me? If your calculation is true and I'm a madman, then your punishment will be like beating a dead horse. There'll be no effect. When a madman is punished, he is not cured of his madness. So, what is the use of all these things that you've said? Sukadev Goswami said, text 14, O Maharaj Prakrit, he was speaking to Maharaj Prakrit, when King Rahugana chastised the exalted devotee Jadbharat with harsh words, that peaceful saintly person tolerated it all and replied properly, Nescience is due to the bodily conception. And Jadbharat was not affected by this false conception. Out of his natural humility, he never considered himself a great devotee, and he agreed to suffer the results of his past karma. Like an ordinary man, he thought that by carrying the palanquin, he was destroying the reactions of his past misdeeds. Thinking in this way, he began to carry the palanquin as before. Purport. An exalted devotee of the Lord never thinks that he's a paramhamsa, and a great devotee, or a liberated person. He always remains a humble servant of the Lord. In all reverse conditions, he agrees to suffer the results of his past life. He never accuses the Lord of putting him into a distressed condition. These are the signs of an exalted devotee, tateyanu kampam susamikshamano. When suffering reverse conditions, the devotee always considers that the reverse conditions are the Lord's concessions. He is never angry with his master. He is always satisfied with the position his master offers. In any case, he continues performing his duty in devotional service. Such a person is guaranteed promotion back to home, back to Godhead. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Tateyanu kampamsu sumichramano bunjane vapmakripa vapakam vidvag vipapur bhir vidatanam namaste jivatayo muktipade sadhayabhak. My dear Lord, one who constantly waits for your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon him and who goes on suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, offering you respectful obeisances from the core of his heart, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. So many important lessons here. We can see clearly that our sufferings are caused by our ignorance, our illusion. And we blame others, but it is actually our illusion and ignorance causing it, no one else. So how did the king respond to this? Now I think it's probably best that I read that tomorrow. There was one purport that I wanted to read that I neglected to. Text 12. Tomorrow we'll begin at 14. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Aham Mameti, one thinks I am this body. And in this bodily relation, he is my master, he is my servant, she is my wife, and he is my son. All these conceptions are temporary due to the inevitable change of body and the arrangement of material nature. We are gathered together like straws floating in the waves of an ocean, straws that are inevitably separated by the laws of the waves. In this material world, this is something for the surfers, the law of the wave, it separates everyone from what they want, from the people. We have so many relationships that we think are the essence of who we are. But when they're bodily relationships, they have nothing to do with who they are. And if we're thinking something is essential to us that has nothing to do with us, that is doomed to destruct by the law of the waves, then how much suffering are we preparing for ourselves? In the material world, everyone is floating on the waves of the ocean of nescience. That's the first corollary of the law of the waves. As described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Mitche Mayaravashe Achabeshe Katcha Habadu Bubai Jeev Krishna Dase Vishvas Karleta Aradukonai. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur states that all men and women are floating like straws on the waves of material nature. If they come to the understanding that they are the eternal servants of Krishna, they will put an end to this floating condition. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Kama Esha Karta Esha Rajaguna Samud Bhava. Due to the mode of passion, we desire many things, and according to our desire or anxiety, and according to the law of the Supreme Lord, to the order of the Supreme Lord, material nature gives us a certain type of body. For some time we play as master, or servant, as actors play on the stage under someone else's direction. While we are in the human form, we should put an end to this nonsensical stage performance. We should come to our original constitutional position known as Krishna consciousness. At the present moment, the real master is material nature. Under the spell of material nature, we are becoming servants and masters. But if we agree to be controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His eternal servants, this temporary condition ceases to exist. So the kings don't like to be called up. They don't like to be chastised in this way. And Denverak just told them the truth. Now the king's reply, we'll hear that tomorrow, if Krishna allows. Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes?
In the book what you just read,
yes.
I'm sure Srila Prabhupada uses the words desire and anxiety.
Yes. Yeah. Each situation, too. I don't want this anxiety. I'm poor and I'm anxiety about it. So that that's another kind of desire to remove an adverse situation. So anxiety is a desire in that form, and they also participate in what next body will have. Yeah, it was an interesting usage. What we want and what we don't want, what we're adverse to. Anxiety means you don't want something, you don't accept that something is the way it should be.
There's no usage. You're anxious to have something.
Then it would be the same as desire. Yeah, well, that is anxious to have something, but anxiety is caused in the negative. It causes so many desires, too. Could be, or just you don't want something to be there. It's in the way. Inconvenient it can even be. Think of the things that cause you anxiety. What caused you the most anxiety today? So there was fear involved in that. So say if you're anxious about something like that, so that causes you to desire to be a great speaker, for example, a great and experienced speaker. So that could be putting in your request for your next body. Well, the thing that we should be really desiring is to be a lover of Krishna. And if Krishna wants us to be a speaker, a good speaker, a poor speaker, who cares? Let me love him. That's getting to the heart of the matter. Okay. Let's imagine how shocked Maharaj Rahugana is at this turn of events. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Dadabharat ki jai, Maharaj Rahugana ki jai. He's going to surrender. Gaur Premanandi.